Attention, FM DJs in the greater Portland area. Your morning show prep begins now.
Seconds after the hour of 9 in this, the month of April in the year of our Lord, 2005. Live from the plushly appointed yet not overly ostentatious studios of Max 910 Talk Radio for Guys. It is the Rick Emerson Show. It's Monday, April 18th. Thank you for coming by. I have just recently regained the full use of my voice, so thank you for coming by and making this part of your listening day. We are live on the banks of the feces-filled Willamette River here in beautiful... That took about 35 seconds. At least I can form words today. Jesus, on Saturday morning, all I could do was just grunt unintelligibly and point at things. We are live in beautiful downtown Portland, Oregon, unlike almost everything else on your radio dial. Thank you for coming by. It's 503-535-9100 in Portland. 503-535-9100 in Portland. If you are in some far-flung place forgotten by our Lord and Savior, such as Vancouver or Salem, it is 1-877-735-9100, and woe be unto you. 1-877-535-9100. If you'd like to communicate electronically with us today, you could do that as well. It's Rick at RickEverson.com. Rick at RickEverson.com for your comments, your clarifications, your kvetches, your what have you. All right, well, we've got much to get through today, including the shaven-chested Brian Kipe, who accosted me in the hallway this morning, looking as he always does, like some sort of a discount Tony Orlando. So he'll be here later on today if we talk about Listener Party 8, which happened on Friday, a couple days past, but we'll do a quick recap of it anyway, because there's much to reflect on and ponder. All right, what do you name your baby when you're a trashy alcoholic hoe? We'll find out what the bookmakers think later on today. The only thing worse than an angry monkey is an angry drug-addicted monkey. And we'll find out how much beer would an Emerson listener drink if an Emerson listener could drink beer. So we have, I think, Chris the beer guy is going to be up later on today. He's the guy every day following our party. We have Chris the beer guy calls up, gives us a recap, gives us the total consumption count. Of everything consumed at our last party, so we will find out everything that got put down. Jolie's going to be here later on with How Chicks Think. Today we're going to talk about the Stuppinger professor, yay or nay. Dennis Glasgow's going to be here from Sports Radio 1080 The Fan. Do a little sports recap. We have another installment of It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard. And this one was sent to me. I had probably 9 different people send me this song over the weekend. It's one of those things that gets injected into the electronic cultural bloodstream. One day it's not there. Next day, everybody has it. And between Friday afternoon and Sunday morning, I probably got sent it to me by 7-8 people. We'll play that later on today as well. It's 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. Good friend Kyle running the board today, keeping things going as always. How was Saturday for you?
It was hell.
Because you had to, just for those who aren't aware of this, so Kyle got it because he was running IMUS on Friday. So you got up at 3:30. What is it, 3:30?
3:30.
Friday morning. 3:30 Friday morning, here all day, then at your real job all Friday afternoon.
Yep.
Then at the party all Friday night.
Until 2:30.
We'll talk about later on. Till 2:30, drinking yourself blind. And then you had to get up at... What time did you have to get up on Saturday morning?
I had to be up by 7:30 and drive to Seattle.
And then once you got to Seattle, there was no rest for you there.
No.
Vince, you were awake all day Saturday, and then you had to drive high-speed motorcycles.
Yeah.
All night.
Pretty much.
All right. Any crippling injuries?
No, there wasn't. There were some good wrecks, though, by other people.
You didn't chip your spine in any places?
No.
See, that's the thing we keep hoping for. That's the thing we keep waiting. Well, no, not... I mean, I don't... No disrespect to you personally. I'm just saying if there's going to be an injury, I just want there to be... I want there to be the video of it. I want there to be film. Because didn't you do like a 360 or something a couple weeks ago? You went like an ass over a teacup,
oh, yeah,
like
yeah.
in the mud?
Right over the top.
See, that's the thing that's going to pay comedic dividends for this radio program at some point. Our good friend Clyde Lewis joins us here on the Rick Emerson Show. How are you today, sir?
You got me up early this morning. I had to come in. So, yeah, I'm here.
Looking bright-eyed and bushy-tailed.
Hey, it was a great party. I don't remember a lot of it, but I had a great time. This is the only thing that's got me bugged is that, okay, last night, okay, I'm being the hairy, scary guy doing my show, just kind of getting into it, really, you know, callers are calling in, things are happening. Get a lull in the night where no one's calling, and all of a sudden some guy calls, his name's Ozone, he calls the show and he goes, "Hey, baby, I heard you were at, I saw you at Rick's party. Is that true that you really had stool in your coat?"
Clyde came as a... Clyde came as Dr. Moreau era Marlon Brando.
Right.
And the best part is you come out and you got like the full-on, like the gray Gandalf robe on, which is sort of your...
Moo-moo.
Sort of your Marlon Brando the poncho or whatever.
It's the moo.
And then you got the overcoat, and at one point you open the overcoat, and there you are with various bags of stool.
Yeah, and, you know, a lot of people didn't get that, but, you know, if they listen to your show, they understand that... Marlon Brando, when he lived in Fiji, he would call people over to his place, and they'd all sit and talk, and then at the end of the night, he'd go,
"Excuse me, I have a jar here.
I need you to leave some stool.
I need you to leave me some stool.
Stella!"
No, and I just thought, you know, if people got the joke, they got the joke.
Because otherwise, they just thought you were a guy who carried feces around.
Yeah, a guy who carried feces around looking kind of old and tired. Yeah, that's me.
Tim Riley's working on the following stories in the Backside 10 newsroom.
A Florida boy dies car surfing. We'll take a look at this dangerous new teenage trend sweeping America. A stunning expose on the woman taking the stand against Michael Jackson today. And get this, Michael Jackson plans a victory tour.
Fantastic. So we'll get to all of that. We've got all that coming up, plus it's the worst song you've ever heard. Jolie is going to be here from Corporate Accounts Payable. We'll talk about this casino, which I guess is hit some sort of a snag or something. We've got the Britney watch coming up today. Jackson watch, double penis watch, geek watch, Darwin watch. Dennis Glasgow will be here later on. We'll talk about the top five and all of that stuff. And we've got... I'm sorry, I'm just distracted by this email that came in about the traffic. Am I the only one that... Does the traffic guy at the top of the hour sound like he's always vaguely surprised that he's being called on to do the traffic?
Oh, yeah. I think he actually is surprised.
Every day, like a 9:01, every single day, 5 days a week, we go to him with the traffic, and every single day it sounds like he's being caught off guard. Like he wasn't quite apprised of the fact that he was going to be called upon to do that. So, all right. Well, we did the thing Friday. We had Listener Partygate, which was a gigantic blowout, which we will talk about more. And I just, I went home and I just collapsed into a coma all of Friday night, all through Saturday.
Yesterday we were working here on News of Ground Zero, and Rick come in and I said, "That's Rick?" Because you didn't look like yourself. You looked like a
bad
dumpster diver walking in.
Bad, man. You don't even want to know. Well, because I had that, my hair was all jet black for the, because Sarah and I went as Sid and Nancy. And I had that Ron Popeil crap into my hair, spray on, which was fantastic, by the way, because it covered my acres and acres of gleaming scalp. And it was, I got all Friday nights, we're at the party, and of course, you know, Sarah looks all hot, because there's something about a hot chick covered in blood. Yeah, it's just a big turn on to everybody. Mm. And so, and I got the Sid Vicious thing going on, but of course, I gotta get my hair jet black. And so I go to the costume shop, and I buy that $4, you know, aerosol hair coloring. And so Sarah's sister Heather just fills my hair with all this stuff, and I go to the party, and everybody's like, "Oh, you look fantastic. You look really great. It's a great hair." And no one can really put their finger on why, but of course it's because when you're spraying your hair black, you're also spraying your scalp black. So you don't, because otherwise, I'm at that awkward stage with my hair where it's like one of those winking eye paintings where depending on what angle you're looking at me from, it either looks like I've got hair or I don't. Like if I now have to do this thing where when I talk to people, I list my head like 30 degrees starboard. Because if you're looking at me straight on or from slightly beneath me, it looks like I've got a full, lustrous head of hair. But if you get anywhere above me or if I'm, like, God forbid you're, like, on one floor of a house, like, looking down over the banister and I'm on the basement, because you're going to see right through to that forest floor. You know what I mean? Like, the last time we were in La Center... There was this awful moment where I'm walking through to the bathroom, and of course, when you're in a casino, there's the eye in the sky everywhere. There's surveillance cameras everywhere, and so there's monitors everywhere. So, you know, to remind you that you're on camera, this is a horrible moment. Because you can live in all kinds of denial, right? And it's, as I've gotten older, I now understand the psychology of the comb-over. Because I will now, I find myself standing in front of the bathroom mirror, taking this Letterman patch of hair right here in the front, where it looks like a carpet swatch. It's been glued to the floor of your scalp. And I find myself twisting it this way and that, brushing it to and fro, just desperately trying to keep everybody from being able to see right through to my skull. And so I'm walking, and so I've managed to delude myself for many, many months, and then I'm in La Center, and I'm walking through the casino in La Center, and I walk, it was like the worst possible positioning, I walk right underneath the camera, while simultaneously facing the monitor that shows what that camera is viewing, and I get that nice, like, full-on top view of my head. Just a big Costanza mark right on there. Just a big doorknob. But, of course, when you color your hair with that spray on stuff, it's your whole scalp is suddenly black, and it looks like you're just, it looks like you got the full-on Shanana hair. You know what I mean? It was fantastic. So I'm going to be spraying my hair with Krylon every day now when I leave the house. Well, all right, so we're going to get behind. We'll do all of that, plus Jolie, plus Dennis, plus a party recap coming up. It is the Rick Emerson Show live from Portland on Max 910. We begin, as we always do, with Trey Parker and Matt Stone, the man song, live on Max 910 on the Rick Emerson Show.
Hey!
Stay right there. Tim Riley next.
Makes a man, is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. Now you're a man, a man, man, man. Now you're a man, a manly, manly man, a man, man, man. You are now a man, you're a man.
Tim Riley begins Everything Around the Corner live from Portland. It's the Rick Emerson Show right here on Max 910. Don't go anywhere.
Live it, live it.
Talk to Rick, call now. In Portland, it's 503-535-9100. Outside Portland, it's 1-877-535-9100.
All right. If you want to email today, you can do it as well. It's rick@rickemerson.com. rick@rickemerson.com. We are live from Portland. Ladies and gentlemen, the real reason you're here today is our good friend Tim Riley.
It's news that hurts. With Tim Riley, only on Max 910.
Well, here's our top Oregon story today. Rocky Mountain goats will be reintroduced to the Columbia River Gorge this summer under a plan adopted by the Oregon Fish and Wildlife Commission. Now, under this plan...
The best part about working at Entercom is the totally ineffectual cough button.
I wish they fixed that.
Well, the cough button works, but they had this brilliant idea that they would build the entire studio out of the sound-reflective material, these hard walls and glass. So it's kind of like you're doing the entire show inside an empty Campbell's soup can. So this is, because I constantly, and with some justification, I constantly get these memos from management about clearing my throat, which is a thing I do. Like all radio guys, I clear my throat compulsively. I mean, you ever meet a radio guy who's like 50 years old, and they all talk like, what's his name, like Marty on KGON. They're all like, hey, how's it going? Because they have no throat lining left. They have decayed away with cheap whiskey and cigarettes. And clearing their throat, because it's this nervous tic you develop where every guy, and I mean every guy, I don't know if singers do the same thing, but every radio guy you will ever see, they have this ritual they do where 5 seconds before they're supposed to go on the air, like it doesn't matter whether it's like the Fog Hat song that's ending or whether like it's me when the opening music is playing, you will see the DJ in there with the microphone off or the microphone turned on, but then turned all the way down, so he's not on. And what are they doing? They're sitting there going... just all sitting there clearing their throat like they got black lung. And so it's a thing that I do, but Because I'm retarded over the years, I've just stopped hitting the cough button, and so I just subject everyone to my phlegm 8, 9, 10 times an hour. So I'm constantly getting these notes from management about hitting the cough button. But, of course, it doesn't do any good because the studio just reflects your sound everywhere. So it is with Tim Riley.
Meanwhile, back to the goat story. Under this plan, 15 to 20 wild goats would be captured near Baker City and moved to Herman Creek. That's east of Cascade Locks in July. The hope is to create a healthy herd of goats. About 300 for the first time in nearly 200 years.
The story's gripping.
It is. Somebody actually went out and did research on the goat.
There are a lot of lonely guys out
you
there.
You must be asking, what happened to the goats in the first place? Yes. Well, when the white settlers got here, they just didn't kill the Indians. They killed the goats, too. They were a threat to democracy.
Fantastic.
Time for the Jackson Watch.
Here's your Jackson Watch from Monday.
Well, it's time to put the wacky lady back on the stand again. In the Michael Jackson trial, MSNBC's Mike Taibbi talks about the woman taking the second day on the stand.
Second, probably a last day of cross-examination. Now, she is either a key witness in what the prosecution says was a Jackson-led conspiracy before the molestation of her son, or, as the defense claims, the architect of a scheme to defraud Michael out of his money. And the defense case is that fraud and perjury are part of her history.
So this is the mom of the kid?
Yeah.
Yeah, she's crazy.
The woman's welfare record shows she's been after the dollar before.
Documents that show the mother claimed she had virtually no assets after she'd received a six-figure court settlement and tens of thousands in donations for her cancer patient son. On November 5th, 2001, the mother's lawyer distributed over $100,000 from JCPenney's and Tower Records, whose security guards, she claimed in a lawsuit, had beaten and sexually assaulted her. The guards denied it, after her older son had been caught with clothes that hadn't been paid for. At least $32,000 of that settlement money was deposited in one bank account, with separate interest-bearing trusts set up for each of her sons. Yet 10 days after the payout, she said in her welfare applications, under penalty of perjury, that she and her children had no money from any source. No court settlements, no bank accounts, no interest income. She also said they had no health insurance, though her ex-husband's policy was and remains in force.
Well, that's no good.
that's
a bit of a reversal for the prosecutor. That's like when the ODB was on. Remember when the old Dirty Bastard was on MTV and there was that famous news clip of him where Tabitha Soren or whoever was following the old Dirty Bastard around with a camera. And they showed him getting into his limo and driving to the welfare office to pick up his... He's, like, in this limo that's 100 feet long, driving to the welfare office to get his, like, weekly dole check before stopping off in his limo at the jewelry store to buy more rings for his stubby little fingers.
So she lied. It doesn't mean she is this time, does it?
Just because she lied on her welfare fraud welfare application doesn't mean that she's lied in this trial.
Is that slip or what? Welfare fraud? Is it because you lied on a welfare... Okay.
Seriously, and that's no way to get ahead in Santa Barbara. You're not ever going to get the sympathy of rich white people by being a welfare cheat.
No.
Sources close to Michael Jackson tell CBS News the singer is so convinced right now that he'll be acquitted, he's planning a triumphant world tour with his brothers.
That seems like a bad idea. That's an exercise in futility. Man, as much as it sucks to be Michael Jackson, it must suck even more to be his brothers, because that whole Jackson family is like one big upended pyramid where everything rests on this tiny little point at the bottom called Michael. It's like, what do you think? I mean, what is Tito Jackson doing right now? I mean, that guy just sits around and waits for another Jackson Brothers, like, reunion tour. If you are Tito or Jermaine Jackson, all you do is sit around and either wait for Jackson to get acquitted so you can go out and sing ABC in front of aging white people again, or you sit there or you wait for your brother to kill himself so you can sell your story to the star. I mean, that's it, man. Like, there's no middle ground when you're one of the other. I can't even name the other Jackson 5. Who can name the other members of the Jackson 5? Clyde, go.
Wayne, Merrill, Jay. No, wrong.
Wayne.
Sorry. No. That's the wrong group.
No, there's
Lativa?
Barry?
Patricia?
Yeah.
Let's see, there's Latoya.
Is Tito one of the Jackson 5?
Tito's one of the Jackson 5, yeah. And there's Tito, and there's dopey.
Shemp.
And is sleepy, sleazy, and
touchy, feely.
Touchy, feely.
Gropey.
Love me long time, titty boy.
Touchy and rapey.
And there's mushy. Don't forget mushy.
Stop.
I think it's time to close out the Jackson
there's,
Watch.
There's your Jackson Watch for Monday.
Humpy.
Uncle Bumpy. How about Lumpy?
I don't want to hear about your Uncle Bumpy anymore. Here's Tim Riley in the Backside 10 newsroom.
This comes to us from the Midwest. A teenager has been sent home from school after the head teacher ruled she was in the wrong place to have a braided hairstyle. Oh, she was the wrong race to have a braided hairstyle. 13-year-old Olivia Acton was told she could not join her classmates at Littleton Technology College because her tightly plaited hair was too extreme for the strict uniform policy. However, two other pupils at the school who have African-Caribbean background are allowed to attend the school with similar hairstyles because it reflects their heritage. The teenager usually has her hair brushed straight, but had it braided during a family holiday. She was stunned to be turned away when she returned to school. She was told she could only go back to the classroom if she unpicks the plates. Middleton Technology headmaster Allison Compton confirmed that braided hairstyles were generally banned in the school, but she would make exceptions for hairstyles that are a reflection of cultural heritage rather than a fashion statement.
You know, no one who's 15 has a cultural heritage. That's stupid. Where is this at?
Somewhere in the Midwest.
Somewhere in the great
so just because
America's heartland.
Yeah.
Some white girl decided to tightly braid her hair.
Which is a stupid idea anyway. White people should never have cornrows. We all, even Kyle knows that this is true. Kyle, above all people, knows.
That is true, but I have a sister that doesn't think that.
Sorry to hear that.
Yeah.
Does she play a lot of field soccer?
Yes, she does.
Does she drive a pickup truck?
No, she doesn't.
Are you sure about that?
A lot of softball, though.
Sucks sand.
What do you think about dreads on white guys?
You working a pet store by any chance?
Dreads
no,
on white
people. No. You can't have... No, here's... So this has become a whole bad Seinfeld routine, but there's a long list of things that whether we're stereotyping unfairly or not, they are just things that you cannot do when you're white because... just because you're going to look stupid. I mean... Look, I don't live in this... let's not all persist in living in this fictional world where we're all the same and we're all... it had nothing to do with equality. It's just that, you know, I can't wear a dress. You know, just that's not going to... I can't wear a dress in pumps.
I
no
saw Clyde Lewis wearing a dress.
Oh, stop. But you know what? It gets the chicks.
It did
work.
No matter how much I may long to, I cannot wear a beehive and pointy shoes. This is not going to work. Mm. And if you're white, you can't have dreadlocks because then you just look like one of those goddamn hippies with those stupid woolen hats on Hawthorne. And that's no good.
Unwashed woolen hats. Remember that?
Yeah, that's what I mean. And cornrows look bad on almost everybody. It's just a thing you don't... It's just like having that Gumby haircut from the late 80s. You don't want to do that either.
Here's Tim Riley.
Time for a monkey watch.
Here's your monkey watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Show.
This comes to us from South Africa, where many monkeys live. A South African zoo is trying to persuade its star chimpanzee to kick a smoking habit. Charlie is a grown male chimp at the zoo. He's been picking up cigarettes thrown at him by visitors, smoking them. A habit which he picked up by observing humans, say zoo officials.
Who gives cigarettes to a zoo animal?
You know, people visiting from, like, Gresham.
Jen Lane in the house.
Thank you. Baby chimps pick up habits by mimicking adults, and we think he started smoking at his enclosure, which probably led to smokers throwing him cigarettes. Charlie has already been showing signs of a true nicotine addict. He even acts like a naughty school boy by hiding the cigarettes when the staff approaches the area. The zoo has determined to help him quit, though. The most important thing is that people stop providing Charlie with cigarettes. Noting that the chimp already has three bad teeth because of all the cans of sweet soda that people throw at him.
That's fantastic. You know where they used to do that? You see that Salt Lake City International Airport. Do you remember that? I was a smoker there, and they used to have, like, this area where you could go and sit and smoke, and people would walk by, and they'd... go to the cigarette machine and they like throw you cigarettes
because
you're like a
there.
Monkey. Give me smoke.
Well, in Salt Lake City, there was. I don't know how it is here. The airport here is completely non-smoking.
They have nothing.
You can't smoke here at all.
No, they let you smoke there.
In Salt Lake City, there was like this one tiny glass room, and it looked like one of the old flash bulbs from the 30s, with just the smoke swirling around, constantly recycling side of it. It was a bad scene,
look
man.
Look at a non-Mormon not smoking. It was like you're in a monkey cage. They like go and they look at you and kids and say, throw something at them, honey.
Any animal who's smart enough to smoke without assistance from humans should be given the choice to do so.
That's right.
If you have opposable thumbs, you should be allowed to do whatever you want.
Right.
All right, there's your monkey watch for Monday on the Rick Emerson Show. Rick, this is a fair question. Listen to this. This email says, Rick, about that smoking monkey, how the hell does he light those cigarettes? That's an interesting question. Monkeys develop the ability to create fire.
Well, you know,
that's it. Put him down now. Put him down now.
Even though lighters may be banned, he probably has matches.
You see a monkey like
seriously
striking a match.
Him and all his monkey friends beating the hell out of Tippi Hedren. It's going to happen around the corner. Gouging the eyes out of Suzanne Plachette's school children.
A smoke.
All right. Speaking of, we should probably mention at this point. We'll, I don't know, about 10:15, we'll do kind of a longer party recap. The Bling Master will be here, and we'll talk about that. We'll find out how much alcohol we sold. There was no monkey on Friday night. For those who care about such things, we should note that Austin, the man with the orangutan, or whatever it was not in attendance. So we were monkey-free on Friday, which is, you know, all things considered, was probably good, because there was...
As far as we know, that place is pretty crowded.
Well, the unofficial tally so far, which we haven't had confirmed, the unofficial tally, I think, was 498 people.
Wow.
Which we had. And it's like, they were packed in there pretty close, especially by the end of the night when we were doing the live broadcast. I mean, there was a whole lot of people in a tiny little space up there. And the idea of a monkey being turned loose in that crowd, you know, like around 10:30 or so, that would have made Rhode Island look like an ice cream social. You know what I mean? That's you don't want any part of that.
It'd be like a bad Great White experience.
Yeah, completely. So, man, a monkey just would have gone through that crowd like it was going through hot butter. So that's I think all things considered, we're very lucky that there was no monkey in
attendance.
Then
it would be hard to get a head count.
We just collect them in the bags at the end of the night. What happened? Oh, monkey came through, decapitated everybody in the game club.
I think Wendy's has bad PR.
Let's talk to our good friend, Mr. Tamako. Mr. Tamako, how are you, sir?
Very, very good.
All right. What brings you to the show today?
Well, I got a monkey and pain story.
All right.
Kind of combining two themes of last week. I was painting a monkey barn with my cousin. And we'd walk by the monkey cages, and they'd put their arms out like little beggars. And I put my arm out there, and they would grab each little arm hair and strip it with their fingernails and, like, nibble whatever was there. And so my cousin thought this was cute, so he put his head down there. This cute little monkey reaches up, grabs a handful of hair, and slams his head up against the bar. And he's, like, pinned there, and they're just gently grooming him. But every time he'd try to pull his head out, they would slam him up against the bar again.
I don't know what it is about stories of monkeys behaving violently, man. That just skips some psychic weak spot I have for that. It's like some comedic Achilles heel. Just bypasses all of my sort of defense mechanisms that makes me giggle. I don't know why.
They're like little aliens. They're so strong. These things were only 18 inches tall, and he was totally pinned up against there. I finally ran up and, you know, yelled at him and scared him off. He was able to get his head out of there, but he'd been slammed up against the bars four or five times.
You know, the best part, though, was the idea of the monkey gently grooming your cousin.
Well, as long as he left his head there, they were happy. You know, there was two of them working on him. I don't know, getting lice, whatever.
Okay, all right, that's it. Okay, that's the end of that phone call. Let's take a break here. We'll be back. Coming up around the corner, we have a Darwin watch. Geek Watch on the way. Britney News, Penis Watch, all of that. Jolie's going to be here later on today. We'll do a recap of Listener Party 8. We got It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard, etc., etc., so on and so forth. You stay there live from Portland, my friends. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere.
We play, we break two needles. There's three of us, but we're not the Beatles. My name is Sam. You can call him D. You can call me Sal. Or you can call him DMC. People always ask DMC, what does it mean? People never heard.
Please, 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 please.
crap. And it's not even local crap. Rick Emerson is live and local. Weekdays from 9 till noon, Max 910. Talk radio for guys.
All right, 503-535-9100 or 1-877-535-9100. All right, Rick. The other Jacksons are Tito, Jermaine, Jackie, and Marlon.
Jackie Jackson?
And Marlon Jackson.
And don't forget Naughty.
Stop.
Naughty Bit Jackson.
I have no idea of knowing whether this is true or not. Rick.
Yo.
About that smoking monkey, how will they get him off his own back? All right, that's the end of that. No more. No more. We're done with that. Ladies and gentlemen, here's Tim Reiling, the Max 910 Newsroom.
Here's a combination Florida Darwin watch.
Fantastic. Go! I ate all my cats.
Go!
My parents won't let me use scissors.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone, and another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
Uh-oh, my heart just stopped. There it goes.
A 17-year-old student in Seminole County, Florida, killed yesterday when he fell off the hood of a moving car.
Well done.
Brandon Buckhart was riding on a friend's car when he fell off the roof of the vehicle near Seminole Boulevard. Buckhart was car surfing with other teens. Car surfing involves someone getting on the hood of a car and trying to hold on as the car accelerates.
The fact that there's even a name for this activity indicates the frequency with which it must happen in Florida. How often does this... think about the idea that somebody actually... this happens so often that somebody had to devise a term for it.
It's like bag wearing. What you got on? Oh, this plastic bag. I think it's a toy.
This bag is a toy. Burkhart was killed as he was thrown from the moving car and then run over by another.
Oh! Looks like he's going to make it.
That one's got to hurt.
Think we should call someone?
It's sort of an... It's sort of an alley-oop.
Is it dead yet?
Police are not saying how many other teens were participating during the incident. There are no other injuries reported.
They'll be easy to spot, though, what with the lack of skin.
Police are trying to determine if the driver will be charged in the incident. His name has not yet been released.
Oh, no, what are you going to do? Guys riding on the hood of your car?
Yeah.
So, I mean, come on. It's like when I was in the last time I was in New York, there's this huge ad campaign going on in Manhattan now to try, well, I mean, I guess all over New York, to try to get teens not to subway surf. And subway surfing, it's like, how goddamn stupid do you have to be? You know, how dense do you have to be for you to decide that a subway, which goes like 70 miles an hour through a metal tube into which it barely fits, is a good thing for you to ride on the outside of? You know, it's like scraping gum off the bottom of your shoe, man. They're going to take you outside in a Ziploc bag. It's a bad scene. And apparently what happens is, and there's all of these great television spots, too, where they try to feign the hipness, you know, where they show like the young styling black man. And it's like his other equally styling young black friend is going to ride this. Hey, let's go chill on the side of the subway, yo. And he's getting on the subway, and his friend like puts a hand on the shoulder, like, yo, that ain't right, dog. That's the whack shizzle, you know, or
something like that. Stevie Wonder walks up and says, don't. Yes. Just don't.
But I guess I thought it was riding on top of the subway, but apparently not. Apparently the deal is that they hang on the side of the subway as it like shoots through the tunnel. She's like off the charts dumb, like the dumbest thing I could possibly think of. So those are the people that you really want to strap a small camera to make some sort of exciting new reality show. And it's just going to be called How Long Until the Idiot Finds Some Way to Kill Himself. It's fantastic. So
that's
there you go.
Darwin watch.
There's your Darwin watch for a Monday.
Another one bites the dust. Another one bites the dust. And another one gone. And another one gone. Another one bites the dust.
Uh-oh, my heart just stopped. There it goes.
Now this is even more fascinating than the monkey story. Passengers on an ill-fated cruise ship slammed by a 70-foot wave awoke with water rushing into their cabins, furniture crashing and glass shattering, while the luxury liner's pianist wrote out the storm by playing the theme to Titanic. Yes, as the battered Norwegian Dawn began to steam home to New York to calmer waters yesterday, the Coast Guard launched an investigation into whether the ship's captain sent a distress signal during the rollicking storm. The first sign of danger for the 1,000-foot ship came soon after its departure from New York, when passengers saw a powerful storm coming on CNN and realized they were helpless in its path. We had no idea. Then we saw 40-foot swells. The storm hit Friday night as tiles exploded out of the ceiling and vases and glasses shattered, sending terrified passengers scurrying for couple with a liner rock back and forth. We felt the whole front of the ship go up and slap right down in the water.
That's no good.
Well, here's the good part. The captain announced that drinks would be free as seasick bloody passengers lurched through the hallways, vainly trying to find stable ground.
Have a margarita.
Others whose rooms were slammed by walls of water huddled under blankets in the atrium.
With free cosmopolitans.
Where they stared at the ship's pianist, repeatedly playing the theme from Titanic.
This is a trip from hell. We're all dead.
I love the idea
this
that
is hell.
And in the pianist's mind, that's exactly what's going to make everybody feel more calm. And repeatedly shouting, I'll never let go!
Some sought refuge in the casino, only to be met by overturning blackjack tables, playing poker chips, and six playing cards.
Ah, good times.
One woman awoke to see her slippers floating by in shin-high water.
Oh, man. I don't even like to think about that. I got a whole thing about the water. I mean, I'm not a big fan of the water at all. I try not to go on boats if I don't. I mean, it's not like a paralyzing fear like it used to be. When I was a kid, man, I mean, when I was growing up, man, I would just be terrified of the water going over bridges. I still don't like going over bridges. The worst part for me is this, and this happens on the Ross Island Bridge in the morning, where you're coming across the bridge, and then there's so much traffic that it just stops. And then you start thinking, because somehow in my head, when cars are moving over the bridge, in my head somehow it's like less weight. But when the cars are just stopped and they're just sitting there,
right,
and there's 300 cars sitting on the bridge, and you start thinking about how much 300 cars, however much it is, 150 cars, however much it weighs, mm-hmm. You start thinking the car is a ton. You start thinking that's 150 tons just sitting on a bridge that was made by the lowest bidder for the contract. You know, and it, like in your head, you can get to where you see the cracks forming and you hear chunks of concrete falling into the Willamette below.
That's what happens when you're on the Selwood Bridge. I keep thinking that every time I cross the Selwood Bridge, it's like crossing a Jenga game. And you're waiting for someone to pull each piece out, and then one day a fire truck's going to go over while you're on it and you're going down with
the
fire
truck. Well, the worst thing they ever did was release that news. Please don't drive on the Selwood Bridge. We don't have any money, for the love of God.
Yeah, what is
bicycles
it rank?
Only.
Yeah, what does it rank? It ranks a zero on the scale of 1 to 10 of safety. Zero.
Really? And that's my
TriMet bus one at a time is okay.
Exactly.
And that's Multnomah County's brilliant idea is just don't use it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? That's like when you have an empty fire extinguisher. And their whole... You know, just don't have a fire and you'll be fine. Don't try to use... And every time you go across the Selwood Bridge... It does seem like there's some overly large vehicle either behind you, in front of you, or coming the other way, crossing right with you.
Totally.
Exactly. Well, I'm glad there's no... You know, and then there's the cement truck comes lumbering down right next to you.
And a logging truck with one rope holding the whole thing together.
Totally.
Yeah.
The
log trucks.
Remind me, by the way, the front page of the Oregonian, there's a fantastic article that which is about the troopers try to catch up with the speeders. I won't read the whole article, but the best thing is this is the tag here, where you can tell that the influence of 1950s newsreel footage still looms large in journalistic circles. It's an article about how people are speeding and cops are catching them and blah, blah, blah. It's clearly just one of those things they've had sitting on a burner for a while that there was no other news to report. And how many times can you talk about the Pope and the friggin' white smoke that they're waiting to come out? But Lisa Lednesser, whoever that is from the Oregonian, here's the article. The opening paragraph is, fewer state police and safer feeling vehicles and an increase in drivers exceeding 90 miles per hour add up to a recipe for death, it says in huge letters. And then there's just this big thing about them.
about speeders and about how the number of people going over 90 miles an hour is huge. And they interview a trooper with an unfortunate... If you ever want to know why somebody becomes a police officer, it's because you're born with the name of Sean Swisher. That's why it is you become... That's where that comes from.
Officer Swisher would be hard to say if you're drunk.
That's officer... That.
Excuse me, can I read your ear, Officer Swisher?
Like one of the hot cops in Arrested Development? Trooper Sean Swisher in his tiny little shorts.
Officer Sean Swisher. That's hard to say.
Seriously, in a big, in a big shiny rhinestone encrusted badge. I'm going to need you to get out of the car and the closet. Here's Tim Riley.
Time for a triple geek watch.
Here's your geek watch.
Ugh, this high-speed modem is intolerably slow.
In the Quasar Dilemma, remember you used to...
Just a television show. That's all, okay?
Right, but... Because we were wondering if the quantum flux... Now, just listen on
there. There is no quantum flux. There's no auxiliary. There's no goddamn ship. You got it?
Energize.
11 Mad Max fans armed with fake machine guns were arrested after they surrounded a tanker truck while making their way to a movie marathon in a theater convoy. As the group headed to San Antonio over the weekend, police received several calls from drivers who reported a militia surrounding a tanker truck. Police charged 9 people with obstruction of a highway and 2 others with possession of prohibited knives, in addition to obstruction charges. Why would knives be prohibited in Texas, of all places? Says here. One of the organizers, Chris Fetter, said the arrests were unfair. He said he didn't know why anyone would confuse the costume crew recreating a scene from Mad Max 2 with a real threat. The movie marathon was canceled after the arrest.
We don't understand why we're wearing leather jackets and harnesses and machine guns and around a tanker truck. No one would even suspect us of anything.
The other night in New York at the Schubert Theater, home of the freshly minted hit Spamalot, there were lines everywhere. There were lines at the box office, lines at the souvenir stand, and lines at the bar, lines upstairs, downstairs, in the stairs, and in between. But there was one spot with no line whatsoever, the ladies' room. That's because Spamalot, Broadway's hottest show from the cult film Monty Python and the Holy Grail, has managed to tap into a rare Broadway demographic, men, especially the kinds of teenagers and 20-something men who find jokes about fish, flatulence, and the French absolutely side-splitting and normally wouldn't be heading to the theater unless a girlfriend or a school trip or a court order was involved. They said the movie preview experts called young men under 35. This is the movie for them, Spamalot, and we have them. Indeed, they've created an entirely new breed of raving musical theater fan, one who may never heard of Rodgers and Hammerstein, or Kander and Ebb, or Stephen Sondheim.
I have no idea who Kander and Ebb are.
I have no idea.
Neither do I.
27-year-old video game programmer
from
Boston.
Are we just walking cliches or what?
Yes, we are.
I am the guy in the article. I have no idea what they're talking about.
A white man who lives from Beijing flew in to see the show. Spamalot has about a 10% chance of coming to Broadway, so this apparently is an off-Broadway show.
You know what Spamalot is? Spamalot is a place where a bunch of guys who are like these geeks that have got business suits on are all standing around going, oh, it's a flesh wound. Yeah. You know, this
the Nazis say knee. That's all it is.
That's all they're doing.
I mean, you're talking about a place that's just a sausage fest, though. There's not going to be any women anywhere. I mean, the male to female ratio there's got to be 25-1. And the best part about the article, and USA Today had a huge piece on this. In fact, where? Right here. Right on the front page of today's USA Today Living section, which is the only section that anybody ever really reads.
Yeah.
It's a huge article. Is Spamalot Broadway's Holy Grail? Is a huge piece here all about the fact that it's drawn on all these dudes. But it's like they're completely shocked by it. It's like they had no knowledge. These people clearly have no foundation in the real world. They obviously don't ever interact with people who actually are entertainment fans, or they would have known this. I mean, there's no woman, I mean, relatively speaking, there's no woman anywhere that's going to go see a Monty Python thing.
Python is like the Stooges, you know, some women get it,
just
some women don't. I mean, it's like, and when you want the women to run away from you? Start reciting things from Monty Python with all your buddies. They will go, this is not my scene.
No,
and they will
just,
leave.
There is stuff, and the Stooges are something else that I would point to that's right. Like that. There's stuff that, by and large, women are just never going to get, no matter how much they want to. And God bless them, there's women who will try. They'll put in the time. They'll work at it. They'll do everything they can, but you're never going to get a woman to understand the sort of subtle nuances and simple joys of Larry Cohen, Moe and Curly. It's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
Ditto with anything about Monty Python. Ditto with a Weird Al concert.
But finding a girl who likes Monty Python is a plus.
Yeah, but see, the thing is, but that's like a hot, you know, it's like that's some like some hot girl that's at a Star Trek con or something. You know, it's like she's already with a guy, and he's, you know, he's carrying a gun because he knows that every other geek there wants her. You know
what I mean?
That
Trill, that was at that one Star Trek convention back in the old days, and she was really hot. She was an aerobics instructor. She was a Trill. She was pretty cute.
She was a Trill?
Yeah.
It's a Trill.
She had those dots all the way down her body, and I asked her, the big
No, that means she's Indian.
Oh, I thought she was...
I'm just kidding. No, I don't have I have no idea what you're talking about.
No, there was this girl, and I was at a Star Trek convention in Utah, and I met up this aerobics instructor. She was beautiful. She was a Trill. She had those little dots on her head.
Oh, I know what you're
down.
Talking about.
And
yeah,
I said,
yeah,
do they go all the way down? That was my line. And she said, you want to see? And I'm going, yeah.
The carpet match the gills?
I can handle this. So, yeah. All right. That was pretty funny.
Here's page 3. Well, it's not easy living on Dork Street. Just ask Maria. I had a resume kickback because somebody thought I was kidding, said Maria, who lived on Dork Street, a suburb of Los Angeles, for 8 years. Esther, who moved there 8 years ago, said she might have thought twice if there had been a sign in those days marking the road tucked away in what used to be an area where people raised goats and chickens in their backyards. I didn't even know the name of Dork Street until I signed on the dotted line when we bought our house, she said. I was pretty shocked when the real estate guy said, for the next 30 years, you'll be living on Dork Street. That's pretty funny, says Clyde, who lived on Dork Street for 8 years. When I go to cash a check at the store, people ask me if I'm a dork. Officials say there's no record at City Hall explaining how the street got its distinctive name, but residents believe that it was named after somebody called Dork.
Okay.
Because you heard about that Satin Street. They actually called it Satan, and they didn't change it. It was called Satan Street.
Well, it's like there was, I've told the story before about a kid I knew that lived on Gay Street when I was going to school, and that's just like... there is a gay street in Portland.
Yeah, it's just one of those things that I'm sure it was a great idea at some point. It doesn't make any sense now. It's like, I've asked this question before, and I don't think we ever came up with an answer. I don't know where Boring Utah came from.
Is there Boring Utah?
Or not Boring Utah, Oregon. Boring Oregon, rather.
Yeah. This is boring.
Yeah, I have no idea. It's one of those names that the...
have a lane down the street from me. I just thought it was kind of, like, redundant.
I just... It didn't,
lane.
The boring Oregon is the thing. It's never made any sense, so we have never known where that came from. Full-time listener. It's Dave. You're on the Rick Emerson Show. What's up?
Hey, Rick.
Hey.
I started dating this girl many, many years ago. Found out that she was not only a Stooge fan, but she could quote Python better than I can.
Now, you sure this is a woman?
Swear to God, she's actually pretty hot. You've met her.
Does she have any stitching? What woman is this?
She's been at a listener party or two. She's my wife. She's smoking hot. Found out she was beyond the fact she was incredible in bed and everything else. Incredible.
See, nobody likes a boaster, Dave. Nobody likes a guy.
Dude, I'm just telling you that they're out there. Once in a blue moon, if you get a hold of them, grab on both hands, and it's going
to
be a ride.
Does she say to you in bed? Does she say things like, I've been naughty. I am very naughty. Yeah, I think I need the spanking. Did she say that?
See, the problem with this is that every guy at every listener party is going to be looking to get you under the wheels of his car. You're a marked man now.
Understood, but if I do tie her up, she says that she's being repressed.
Oh! Okay. Okay, well done. What celebrity would you say she most resembles?
Juliana Margulies, the chick from ER.
Fantastic. Okay, cool. I'm all over that.
There you
go. She wasn't the chick that was showing her cans to Kyle on Friday, was she?
No, those are for me.
Oh. Okay. All right, thanks, a-hole. All right, there you go. All right, back.
He loves to push the cans a lot. Sorry, I had to do that.
There's your geek watch.
My grandson's hammer.
Thank God.
By the Sons of War van. I shall avenge you.
Next.
Ooh, loneliness and cheeseburgers are a dangerous mix.
All right, you're listening to the KFTK Vancouver, Portland, Caselum. Salem and Intercom Station, by the way.
Well, it was on the TV tonight. Duel with Dennis Weaver.
It's a fantastic film. Steven Spielberg's second.
I thought it was his first.
Was Sugarland Express his first, or was Duel his first?
I think Duel was his first.
Duel's a made-for-TV movie starring Dennis Weaver.
Is he still alive?
I don't know. I was actually, because we were playing Dead or Alive,
On Friday, and I have no idea whether Dennis Weaver's alive or not.
He always looked like a meth addict from Southeast.
No, it's true. He has that skin that's alternately weather-beaten and sandblasted. It looks like one of those guys who comes to your door because he's trying to, quote, get back on his feet and wonders if he can do odd jobs around the house.
Down on his luck.
Ends up walking off with all of your silverware.
Me, I was McCloud.
And every time I see him, Dennis Weaver's one of those guys who, for some reason, at a certain point in his life, decided to play the I'm an American, I have like an Indian heritage card. And so he started showing up on like Politically Incorrect, clearly just drunk. And I mean like Adam West drunk. And resplendent with turquoise jewelry everywhere. Looked like he was probably living in some bad tent on the outskirts of Nevada, reeking of gin all the time.
Did he have a tear in his eye?
No. Iron Eyes Weaver.
Iron Eyes Weaver, yeah.
But Duel is a fantastic film. It's a made-for-TV film. One of the scariest movies I've ever seen. I mean, the first time I saw it, it's terrifying. It's still terrifying. One of Steven Spielberg's very first efforts. And it was... people don't really know this. Duel is what Spielberg modeled Jaws on. He just said it was Jaws was Duel with a shark. So if you want to see kind of an early Steven Spielberg effort that is still fantastic, watch Duel.
Immediately followed by the most boring movie ever, Easy Rider.
Yeah, you don't want to watch that.
Yeah, what a crappy movie.
Yeah.
Also on E! True Hollywood Story, the life and career of actresses Kate Hudson and Goldie Hawn.
No, that lasts how long?
That's one of, well,
2 hours.
Well, that's one of those...
Really?
2 hours?
Well,
I guess each gets an hour.
Oh, man, did you see that picture? I saw a picture of Goldie Hawn without her makeup the other day. Have you seen that picture that's going around?
No.
There's this email that's being passed around, and there's a bunch of starlets without their makeup on. It's just like a million miles of bad road. Goldie Hawn, just all, man, just looks like a bad lunar landing surface. I mean, it's terrible. I can't fathom why you would sit and watch 2 hours about Goldie Hawn. When you first said it, I figured it was like an hour-long show, and it was like a box of nerds. It was one of those where you didn't really have enough of either to make a full hour, so you just sort of jam them both into the one show.
It's probably an excuse to talk about her husband's career. Black Crowes. Oh, I thought it was about Kate Hudson. No, Black Crowes. Yeah. We'll talk about that right now.
Mark for Death with Steven Seagal.
That's a fantastic film.
Bringing Down the House with Steve Martin.
And Queen Latifah.
Yeah.
You know, they're making a sequel to that. I read the... No, I've got to run. They're making a sequel to Big Mama's House. I'm sorry, that's my mistake. That's my bad.
So they're different movies.
So they're not, though. That's the best part, is they're completely the same movie.
Wasn't that with Martin Lawrence?
Yeah, Big Mama's House is the one. It's another one of those, like a really poor, destitute, shelter-living man's Eddie Murphy movie, where it's Martin Lawrence. It's one of those terrible films where you're sitting there in your theater, and it's like, and and you're waiting for whatever to start. And they say, the following preview has been rated R. And there's that brief glimmer of hope you're going to see the preview for something funny. And then they say, Martin Lawrence! And then he's like, all your hope immediately just goes down the drain. But it's a terrible preview where he's sitting there and you're watching it, and they say, you know, what happens when a zany black man, or whatever it is, that whatever the trailer's saying, starring Martin, and it shows him, you know, Martin Lawrence. And then they show the fat black woman, and Martin Lawrence. And then they show all the fat, you know, kooky white men, and Martin Lawrence. You know? And it's like you're just sinking further in your seat, just lamenting the state of American popular culture. Yeah. Bringing Down the House, though, is that movie with Steve Martin and Queen Latifah, where he's divorced and she's streetwise or something, and it's like some bad stand-up comedy from, like, 1982 about, you know... You know, thin white people and fat black people are different in the following kooky ways.
And they're always funny together. So why don't we watch this horrible preview, and I'll go get a piece of kernel popcorn out of my epiglottis.
We're all brothers under the skin.
Should we pause now, 10 seconds, for station identification?
I already did that like 9 minutes ago.
You slipped it in when you weren't looking.
No, I didn't even notice.
You were busy talking about Dennis Weaver looking like he was on the junk. By the way, Dennis Weaver is alive, says this email.
He is alive.
And he's not on the junk.
Born in 1924, his last film was the voice of a chicken in Disney's animated movie Home on the Range.
That's too bad.
And there you go. This is from Aaron. Duel trivia. The long shot chase scenes were reused for an episode of The Hulk and the A-Team. F-Matt with a muddy trucker's boots.
This F-Matt is brought to you by Barfly Magazine.
All right. How did we even know that your last gig was being a chicken in a damn movie?
Well, at least it's Disney.
Well, it's time for Ashton Kutcher to be in every movie every week. Here's another one. Ashton Kutcher, who can now be seen in the comedy Guess Who, plays a man named Oliver Geary who meets a woman named Emily. and a cross-country flight. The two initially decide they're not suited for each other and go their own ways to be... Who cares? This movie's called A Lot Like Love. Please talk about your character.
I believe that when you first meet Oliver, he's just graduated college. He's kind of in that... that lost space of, okay, I got a degree, now what do I do with it? And kind of has the world open to him.
Like getting his car worked on?
His girlfriend is just broken up with him, basically. Sort of girlfriend, sort of not. And he's waiting for the world to come to him.
What a refreshing plot.
Boy, he's the world's dullest man.
What do? You corner him in a minute lube.
Seriously.
You know.
And right. Apparently he sings in this film.
No. I have a hyper-sensitive fear of singing in front of people.
Fortunately, no one will be there to see him.
Stems back to a solo performance in choir in high school that did not go well. And so I have a bit of a hypersensitivity to that.
So you said.
And so I just kind of backed up that nervousness and placed it for the character where it would be for him in that moment, you know, standing in front of this girl trying to be the guy that she wants him to be.
There it is again. Dropped a wrench again, guys.
He's a regular synthetic, Ashton. Jesus. Yeah, he's a regular checkoff.
He is.
All right.
Joe Frost is Super Nanny, a woman who helps families in desperate situations to bring their homes under control. She sat down with me recently, and she says every tantrum in every family is different.
Haven't seen one tantrum that I could say, oh, my word, that was just like a real shocker.
I hate whoever this is already.
Because it's about the family. For me, you know, this is not about me. This is about the families. This is about helping the families.
Yeah.
And if I walk into the Joneses and the mother actually says, oh, my God, I just feel so distressed, and she just breaks down and cries because what she's seeing, but another family doesn't, then that's fine. Each family is unique.
I'm going to beat that woman with a wrench.
I just got a great idea right now for a reality series. The Nanny and Charles Manson. I think it'd be the one.
Yeah. I don't understand.
I think it'd be great.
I don't understand the show. So there's a British woman who comes and helps you with your little bastard American
children.
Yeah,
I guess they tell you.
Isn't that Nanny and the Professor? Don't you remember that show? Nanny and the Professor.
No, yeah, I'm thinking of that Hulk Hogan movie.
No, there was Nanny and the Professor. There was a British nanny, and she came,
hello, I am your nanny.
And it was kind of like Fran Drescher's show, but different. They redo the show over and over again about a nanny moving in. It's so
I just want to see an episode of The Nanny where she just beats the holy hell out of the children the first time.
Joe says it's not easy for a person to change behavior overnight.
I don't think it's easy for anybody, not talking about family, you know, for any of us to implement maybe a different lifestyle or a different food plan. It's going to be different. Change is hard because it's changing old habits, bad habits,
that are
creating the negative results that we see before our eyes. And it is hard. But these families, you know, they want change. They want to make their lives better. They want to make their children happier. They recognize, as parents, instinctively, that something's not right here. It's not quite right, but they don't know how to change it, and they don't know what tools to implement in order to change things for the better.
How about a crowbar?
Kyle just noted that he wanted to punch this woman in the face.
I just wonder how her teeth are.
It's like in my neighborhood, like in Southeast, like where around I live, the child correction techniques usually result in the parents just at 2 a.m. drunkenly screaming, "You are a mistake! Your father was supposed to wear rubber."
That's all it is, man. They're just run over when they try to cross 80 seconds.
Seriously. All right. Let's see, Rick. The all-male combination you have in the show today is a welcome break. I'm enjoying the unchecked sadism. Well to go. Way to go.
It's our version of The View.
It is. Testosterone-filled view tonight.
Here's Tim Riley, the Max Night 10.
Time for the Britney Watch.
Here's cool. Your Britney Watch from Monday.
Saw him dancing there by the record machine. I knew he must have been about 17. The beat was going strong. Play my favorite song.
This area has the smallest print I've ever seen anywhere. Look at the font on this.
Well, you got glasses.
I have glasses.
Good.
I'll do my best to get through this. Here we go. In posting on her website, Britney Spears told fans that she and husband Kevin were expecting their first child together, not mentioning a gender. But Thursday night, numerous online publications were reporting the baby is female. Does anyone actually know the child's gender? Hard to say. British publications and the New York Daily News reported that. When asked how Spears is faring after miscarriage scare, a spokeswoman says she's okay. Mother and daughter are doing fine. According to rival New York Post, Page Six gossip columnist, I don't know the sex of Britney's baby, she said. I am shocked that they would blatantly print a lie and attribute the lie to me.
Man, there's no good answer there when you talk about whether she can have a son or a daughter. Either one of those kids is effed. There's no way that that's going to turn out well.
If it's a daughter, they'll tart her up when she's three.
Seriously, man.
Like, look at Britney's baby. It's a tart at 3 years old.
Yeah, it's going to be like JonBenet Spears. There's no...
She'll be... And a remake of Full House.
Yeah.
The Olsen twins will be waiting. The countdown for Britney's baby has begun.
Well, that kid's clearly going to have like a three-pack a day habit as soon as it comes out anyway. You know what I mean?
She'll be smoking with a monkey.
Dennis Pitzenberger, he had that whole thing. He came on Friday. Was like, I'm not going to be able to come to the party because my girlfriend's pregnant, and I don't want to subject my kid to the smoke. Man, Friday night, 9 o'clock, there was Brandy, like, right down front, in front of the ear-shatteringly loud speakers, breathing in the accumulated smoke of, like, 480 people. So that kid's clearly on the road to Wellville.
Bookmakers are already taking bets on what Britney is going to call her baby. Quick to get in on the act, bookies are putting William and Harry as joint favorites because of Spears' supposed obsession with the royal males. Both are offered 20-1. If the child is a girl, the bookmakers are offering 20-1 on Zara, that's Z-A-R-A, or Grace. Punters have been calling with all kinds of suggestions, but there's no doubt that the public think that Britney will buck the trend and choose wacky names, and they're falling all over themselves.
Like broccoli?
Well, I don't know what the thing is with celebrities. It's like being a celebrity kid is so hard in so many ways, regardless. You go and you saddle your kid with some retarded name because you want to give it... Like
Scout.
Moon Pie.
My name is Scout.
Well, like Gwyneth Paltrow named her daughter Apple. I'm just like, I don't know what goes through your head. It's like Eddie Van Halen's the same way. His kid's name is Wolfgang Van Halen. You know what I mean? It's just like the dumbest name.
My ex-girlfriend named her daughter Kansas.
Yeah,
I'm going, Kansas? Why name her Kansas?
My son Fog Hat.
Why didn't you just name her what she's going to be? Just be like, hey, whore.
Yes.
Just call her whore. Like,
whore Spears.
Hua Spears. This is how they call it. Hua.
If she's named Kent, she's probably going to be flat-chested just like the state.
All right, let's bring down the curtain on this unpleasant. Thank you. That took an unpleasant turn.
God, her daughter's old now. I can imagine that.
All right, let's
older.
Let's not revisit that subject, man. Here's Tim Riley.
With an assault weapon in each hand, rocker and gun rights advocate Ted Nugent urged National Rifle Association members to be hardcore radical extremists demanding the right to self-defense. Speaking at the NRA's annual convention, Nugent said each NRA member should try to enroll 10 new members over the next year and associate only with other members. Let's next year sit here and say, holy smokes, the NRA has 40 million members now. No one is allowed at our barbecues unless they are an NRA member. Do that in your life. Nugent sang and played a guitar painted with red and white stripes with the crowd at Houston's downtown convention center. He drew the most cheers when he told gun owners they should never give up their right to bear arms and should use their guns to protect themselves. Remember the Alamo, shoot him, he screamed to applause.
You know, you got to be glad that Ted Nugent is in the NRA, because can you imagine if, like, Alanis Morissette was, you know, every year she'd play and sing songs about killing people with guns?
Well, Ted Nugent is one of those guys. He's like one of those Gene Simmons guys who just doesn't make any apologies about it. He just is what he is.
Yep.
To show you how radical I am, I want carjackers dead. I want rapists dead. I want burglars dead. I want child molesters dead. I want the bad guys dead. No court case, no parole, no early release. I want them dead. Get a gun when they attack and shoot them.
Well done, Ted. I'll do one more here in a second. Do I have you to thank for this, about this interview opportunity, Tim?
Yes, you do.
Why do you get... See, I don't get any of this stuff. None of it ever comes to me. My interview opportunities go to Tim. My Playboy goes to Dave Paul, who hasn't worked here for like 3 years. All of my books go to Matt. Let's see. Producers and bookers, did you use a Post-it note today? If so, you're one of the millions who do every day. Well... this doesn't even make any sense. This is written in, like, some sort of weird pigeon English. Stick there, this interview, Chance. smile, happy, fun family Japanese wish show. Doesn't make any sense at all.
They must be going through a Latvian PR agency or something.
Like outsourcing this to Taipei.
Happy family show.
Fun, exciting, tune-in radio, happy smile hour. That's how post-note inventor Art Fry made his millions. And we have him available to talk about how he came up with this popular... Imagine how dull it must be to interview the man who invented post-it notes. He can provide inspiration to thousands of other would-be inventors out there. He's also sponsoring the Staples Invention Quest, a contest to find the next great office product. Jesus God, I want to die.
Laughs many.
That new inventor may be a listener in your audience. Just think of the many exciting calls you'll have about office inventions. Yes, just think about it.
And it's Rick Emerson's show. Post-it notes. Interesting.
The interview
is about post-it notes.
The interview is scheduled for Thursday, April 28th, from 6 a.m. to 10:30 a.m. or later. I'll attach a media alert with more information. Yes, it's breaking news. Alert.
Post-it notes.
Just email to book a time that's convenient.
He'll end up on AM Northwest.
Man, it's almost tempting to get him on. It really is.
What would he talk about?
I don't know. What? How?
I came up with the idea one day when I decided to use chewing gum to stick my notes to the computer.
Well, see, and I know... the thing is, because I'm a loser, I know the whole story about post-it notes.
What?
I know the whole story about post-it notes.
This is a relevant interview.
No, how did it happen?
The whole scene, I can tell you right now, the post-it note story came out because there was a guy who was a quiet... There was a good... Because 3M has...
I was sitting here in the back room with my stapler.
Stop.
And I just didn't know.
Is this a thing you're really asking me? Because I can really
tell us. Yeah. What happened? Yeah. That way we don't have
here's
to interview
this guy. It's the story about 3M. The story about 3M is this. People don't realize, who is it that I know that works at 3M? There's somebody I know who works at 3M. Oh, it's my friend Jason, who's a still photographer. All he did the press photos for Bigger Than Jesus. His mom works at 3M. And 3M is constantly, they're like Xerox. They're constantly just creating things that never get marketed but are fantastic. For instance, this is a true story. 3M has created this welcome mat for your front door, and the welcome mat is like a pad of post-it notes. It's a welcome mat that has hundreds of cloth squares. And you dry your feet in the welcome mat, and then when that welcome mat is dirty, you don't clean it. You just go and tear it off, throw it away. It's like a pad of paper. It's like a whole pad of welcome mats. They're in front of your house, but they don't sell it. It's just this, they just create it. I mean, it's like being in college and never actually using any. They just create it, never do anything with it. They just create it and stick in the thing. So they had created this adhesive that was kind of sticky, but not really, and it was sort of like an accident. Like, well, who would ever want this adhesive glue that's sort of sticky but doesn't actually hold anything up all that well? Then there was a guy who worked at 3M who was in a choir and was constantly having to put notes to himself on his sheet music, but he would use Scotch tape, which then... Isn't this a gripping story?
It is.
You're listening to listening to us.
We're both sitting on
it. We're just sitting on the edge of our seats.
But
definitely.
Then he would take the notes off the sheet music with the Scotch tape, and it would tear the paper. So he was lamenting this fact to a guy at 3M who said, well, hey, boy, howdy, I've got this quasi-effective glue we inadvertently made the other day. What if we put my glue together with your need for a thing to put stuff on your sheet music? Bada-bing, post-it notes.
There you go. And there you have... And the rest of the story. Thank you, Rick.
So there you go. So now I don't have to have post-it notes.
That was good.
That's how we build Cume.
Art. There you go. This is exactly the segment they play for prospective advertisers when they're pitching the edgy hot talk radio.
Go on and on about post-it notes. Isn't that gripping?
I'm almost tempted to get him on. I'm going to put this in the maybe pile.
Okay.
All right. There you go. Well, let's break here because we're running behind. We'll break here. We'll come back. We'll talk to our good friend Brian, the Bling Master. We'll get a little party recap. We'll talk to Chris, the beer guy. Find out exactly how much beer was sold on Friday at the listener party. Later on, Dennis Glasgow's going to be your sports wrap-up. Jolie with How Chicks Think. And today's installment of It's the Worst Song You've Ever Heard. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Live from Portland. Don't go anywhere.